You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, the perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by ContinentalMLSSoccer.com. I'm Andrew Wiebe, hanging out in the green room, Bobby Warshaw, Matt Doyle, in the same room, ready to do battle, to...
pontificate?
Hold hands, as Kobe Jones and Brian McBride said they have done much recently.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. 2026, they were happy.
Oh, right.
Does Doyle always do the podcast with a computer in his lap?
Yeah, that's a pretty standard move. He's a multitasker, and he's not at all entertained by what Dave or I have to say. So
he is a super multitasker. I don't let people know that about Doyle. He's the best multitasker I've ever been around.
Wow, he's just passing out praise.
Yeah, that's a little weird. I got to tell you, Bobby rocked me back on my heels with that to start the show. I was not prepared for a compliment. I was going to compliment Gasman's Instagram feed.
Oh wow!
Because he has been in what, St. Petersburg for the last 4 days.
St. Petersburg. He was in Russia for Mexico, Germany. In case you're
he was
under
in the
a
stands.
Rock or in a coma. Yeah. I hope you're not in a coma. Truly, truly do. Yeah.
But if you are,
probably,
hey, good luck. We're pulling for you.
Probably
for sure.
Not listening to this podcast.
He was at Mexico, Germany. He's everywhere, wearing a Martinique hat, being the soccer hipster
that
he is.
Gasman is one of those people who can just make friends with anybody, anywhere, because he will
even
just
people
talk
he doesn't
and
like,
and even
which
people
is how he does
who don't
show.
Like him. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that's sure. How he does Extra Time Radio. Yeah. Of course, the World Cup is going down. We're watching it every single day. England just beat Tunisia, which is unfortunate for Doyle's troll game on Twitter, but fortunate for all
been a rough couple of days.
The anxious Englishmen out there. Of course, MLS is playing a part. If we just run over what's happened so far, of course, we'll get to the Jason Christ news, the bombshell from Orlando City. I guess not really a bombshell, but...
Are you not going to point out that in our office cheeseburger pool that Doyle has England, he has his cheeseburgers bet on the English national team? Mm-hmm. So all the trolling he's doing on Twitter... When a push comes to shove, when he has to put his cheeseburgers where his mouth is.
2018, my friend, only bad things can happen. So, behold, 2018 World Cup champions, England. I'm just betting on the bad.
He was pretty far down the chart there. And dual purposes for you. Invest in trolling as well and possible outlay. Well, we know that money's not coming for you. Look, MLS has a part, of course. We won't belabor this point. I think somebody on the last show said, what was it? Less is more. Go small. Don't belabor the point. We won't. Yoshi Otun played. Peru lost to Denmark. Heartbreaker for the Peruvians. Raul Ruiz Diaz, the Sounders target, came on late in that match as well. Costa Rica, not their run from last go-round just yet. They lost to Serbia on a free kick. Daniel Guzman, Francisco Calvo, Marco Arena started for them. Other MLSers on the bench. Other MLSers like Christian Bolaños playing in the game. Carlos Vela in Mexico upset Germany. We'll get to that in a second. Gustav Svensson, a late sub for victorious Sweden. Panama, four MLSers in the starting lineup. Godoy, Murillo, Torres, and Escobar lost to Belgium. But look, that's the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
No shame in that.
Panama actually played really well. Murillo had a chance to put him up 1-0. Touch in the box was so nice, but it was a big save from Courtois.
The player I'm rooting for most in this World Cup, not even a question, Blas Perez.
Oh yeah.
Oh, give me some Super Ratón.
And I didn't realize that about myself until this morning, when in the build up to that game, and I guess it was in the first 5 minutes, and I realized, like, dear God, I want to see a Blas Perez World Cup goal.
Yes, and the celebration. And Bobby's kind of got a little bit of a sour face here. Does that mean that you and Blas had some special moments in training?
Everyone had special moments of training. You couldn't have been Blas's teammate and not have those moments. But
did he dive in training?
Did he dive in training? Yeah, dude, of course. He would dive in the weight room if it helped him. There's no limit to the amount that Blas would do for his own self-interest.
The strength coach is like, look, we got another round of reps going here. And Blas is like,
I thought I was a professional player. And then you play with Blas and you're like, man, this profession can be taken to a whole new level. But I cheer for Blas. He was a good teammate and a good dude.
Do we cheer for Mexico? You don't?
I don't.
Look.
I absolutely do not.
It's hit the, I don't know what it's
hit. Weeby's down in San Jose buying Costa Rica shirts.
I mean, yeah, I don't know why people take this so seriously. If you haven't been paying attention, Landon Donovan gotten a lot of hot water on the social medias for his support of Wells Fargo and their campaign to support Mexico. There was a whole thing, a whole back and forth with Carlos Bocanegra. I don't really care to rehash all that. You can go catch up on Twitter or wherever it else you is that you waste your time that isn't here. Look, I'm not like going to go wear a Mexico shirt. I'm not going to be going around throwing up El Tri hashtags and like celebrating, but I'm rooting for Mexico. I think they're engaging. I like watching them. They're entertaining. I don't take this too seriously. If they play the U.S., I will never – I want everything bad to happen to them short of injury. But outside of that, I can't get riled up to the point where I'm like, no, Mexico, I want you to fail. They'll fail. Don't worry. I'm sure they will. That's their history, and they can't escape it. But that's the joy, is the drama-filled potential. And also, they play soccer that I like to watch.
I thought I would never cheer for Mexico. I think having Carlos Vela within our little sphere now helps. I will say that I cheered for them until Rafa Márquez came on the field, and then it all dissipated, and I wanted nothing but horrible things to happen.
Which is completely fair. I'm cheering for Rafa Márquez to get on the field every time because it improves my viewing experience, and I have nothing else to root for because the U.S. fell on their face spectacularly. And I'm not going to say ruined this tournament for me, but certainly gave it a demerit in terms of just like my personal enjoyment and stakes.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you're not cheering for Mexico because you're good at recognizing the growth of armchair analysts. And if Mexico makes it to the semis and the finals, that's good for us.
True cynicism.
You think it would be good for the brand?
That's good for all. I mean, honestly, I think that's part of the
hashtag ad.
That's a good thing. I think it would be good for all of us if Mexico advances far. That's more content for us to create.
Unquestionably. Be good for all of us here on the show, and it would be great for MLSsoccer.com, especially if Carlos Vela keeps playing how he plays.
And what if the Dos Santos get on the field and do something special? That would be the Giovanni Dos Santos
way. There would be some very happy people in Carson, I would tell you that much.
Yes, there would.
But I'm not going to root for them. I'm going to root against them. It's sports. I like having rooting interests in sports. And like Andrew, you know, my heart is broken that the U.S. aren't there. And the team, the only thing I care about in baseball is whoever's playing the Yankees. That's my favorite team. In college basketball, I will never root for Syracuse. Satan himself could come onto the court with four teammates, play against Syracuse for my immortal soul. I would root for Satan.
I guess
so,
I'm.
But the question here is, how are you going to clone Jerry McNamara? Because there's just one of him. So I don't know how he could be the four.
Satan was already on the court. And he was playing for Syracuse. I will never root for Mexico. And
and that's fine.
And it's fine. It is absolutely fine for Landon Donovan or whoever else to decide they do want to root for Mexico. It's fine. It was the rest of the stuff that I think really got Landon in hot water.
For sure.
The tweet to Carlos Bocanegra I thought was inappropriate.
Agreed.
You know what? There are people taking him to task for that. But the point is, enjoy the World Cup however you enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy it, I hope, by watching Mexico and England lose their next two games. That will probably not happen. But, root for who you want. Period.
Agreed. And for whatever reason you want. And if is that some international corporation paid you some money to do it,
I'm kidding, man.
Throw the hashtag on there and
root for
Perez. Deal with the repercussions.
I was lying about all
happen.
That.
Yeah. I mean, look, those are special stories to me. And the World Cup is about a lot. We'll get to Jason Christ in 1 second. I do want to ask you guys one question, because this is always something that I wonder about during these tournaments. What's your routine? How do you watch this? What's the best way for you to watch the World Cup? Some people are going to say, I need to be in a bar with fans of that team. Some people are going to say, you know what, I want to be by myself and I want to study every little tactical nuance, and that person is probably Bobby Warshaw.
No, I'm about to tell you the opposite, and I wanted to go first on this just because I wanted to call out Doyle for a sec, because people that try and analyze the World Cup make me so mad. People that tweet out tactical observations and analysis, I want to just shut the hell up and enjoy the World Cup. Nobody wants your analysis, guys.
Really? You don't think so? This
no.
is your bread and butter.
Listen, I love.
I don't, personally,
I think if
that.
You analyze it, you don't actually like it. Like, just enjoy the experience of watching the World Cup. Nobody really has any – I mean, soccer in itself, we really have no idea, even though we're paid to pretend like we do. The World Cup, we have even less idea what's about to take place. So let's not
– There is a – I mean, there is a kernel of truth there that, like, I don't really like anything anymore. So you might have hit on something.
Oh,
you guys disagree. You like when people tweet out. Like, you guys watch the games trying to pick out observations.
My new life goal is to consume things without having a second screen.
Yeah.
Because I feel that we've all, you know, and I am as guilty as anyone else, succumbed to the, like, you know, basically how Doyle is consuming this podcast right now, which is he's here, but he's mostly on Twitter, mostly checking his likes on that England tweet.
I need that
dopamine drip.
Great, yeah. I mean,
all right, guys, I'll close
the
computer.
Okay, you don't have to. Your performance is great with it. Your performance is great with it. I mean, it's ruining. It's ruining sports consumption for me because I'm missing even the most minute enjoyable moments. I'm missing them, and then I'm re-engaging with them later via another platform, via someone else's opinion, instead of just seeing it for myself. And that's my goal for this tournament. That's how I'm trying to do it. And I'm also explaining to my in-laws everything there is to explain because they're staying with us this week about the World Cup and soccer. And it's hard. It's fun, but it's hard because I'm really boiling it down. But look, we'll keep it rolling here. Let's talk Christ. This was not surprising. The timing was surprising. It was in the middle of Friday, and basically in the middle of games. You're watching the World Cup, and then you see a tweet from Orlando City that just says, "Hey, we've parted ways with Jason Christ." There's a reason why we weren't surprised. Six straight losses, the volatility of that coaching position so far in Major League Soccer. Of course, Adrian Heath was let go in the middle of the season. They don't have a problem doing that down in Orlando. Here was the tweet and the language on their website. Quote, "Orlando City SC has agreed to part ways with head coach Jason Christ, effective immediately." I don't think they needed to – who are they agreeing with? They fired him.
Yeah.
So they got around a table and they said, "Yes, we agree. We will fire Jason Christ."
Yeah. Well, they agreed on that buyout, right? On the money.
I assume so.
Got to be part of it.
Yeah, you basically have to agree to a whole new contract.
For sure. So assistant coach Bobby Murphy will lead the team while the club conducts a comprehensive search for a new head coach. Bobby Murphy joined about 6 or 8 months before Jason Christ did. He was a longtime youth coach in the Central Florida area, and he had helped run their academy. So the two assistants, Miles Joseph, and I'm blanking on the second.
C.J. Brown,
have also left by mutual consent from Orlando City. So they do not have a coach with what I would call professional chops. He's got a lot of years in the game. In no way do I know Bobby Murphy. In no way do I know his background. I don't want to denigrate the man. But he doesn't have professional experience.
Right.
This is his first professional experience. This is a team in disarray that rebuilt themselves.
What you're really saying is that he's not – he's an interim coach
Correct.
For a very short time.
He
and
is
he's
not,
probably not going to
right.
End up
he there. Is there to hold over until the next regime comes in place, and I don't expect he would leave because it seems like he's very integrated into their youth structure.
You guys have been in this news business for a while. What do we think of the Friday news dump?
Oh, that was an epic news dump. That was as
Chivas
as oh yes. That.
But is it good on? Is it well done on their part?
No. But I don't know that you have a There's not a big positive outcome here for you as Orlando City. You just fired your head coach because your team's not performing well, and there's a good possibility that after you spend a bunch of money and went to the transfer market within the league and spend a bunch of allocation money, that what you've gone for isn't coming off. So I don't know that there's any positive here to how you spin it, unless, like Taylor Twellman is saying, Big Phil is on the other side, and then you have an internationally recognized head coach. But if you wanted to spin it that way, you'd back-to-back these announcements, which they haven't done.
Yeah.
The news dump is to bury something you're not happy about. They can't be happy about this, but I respect their news dump.
I do too in its way, but I think my attitude were I running the team would be like, don't dump it. Make it front page. Make it, you know, Wednesday afternoon so that everybody sees it because the fan base is upset and they deserve to be upset, frankly. You know, like get it out there and don't hide. Be honest about it.
The only thing worse than losing is being irrelevant.
Yeah, I think so.
And they're not. And even with this news dump, I mean, this is big news in Orlando, but they are creeping toward that nether region of non-competitive, right?
Yeah.
Of
like, I mean, I think so, but at the same time, like, I still like this roster. I think there's a lot of talent. You know, I'm a bigger Justin Meram fan than Bobby, but like, and I know he struggled, but he's a good soccer player. He's proved that for the last 5 years. Sasha Kalesjian has proved it in the Champions League, in MLS, you know, and you know, winning titles in both places. Dom Dwyer, obviously a crucial key, like, and those guys are, those are what you build around an attack. Then you have Christian Coleman, Chris Mueller, you know, good young players. You have a back line that you've spent on. Like, if I was a coach, I wouldn't look at this and be like, oh man, this is just a terribly constructed roster.
It's a decent situation to drop into midseason. You're not dropping into tire fire. There's no way we're going to turn this around. You're just there to kind of be a tourniquet, figure out who should stay, kind of the way Jason Kreis was in a sense with Adrian Heath. Did they pull the trigger too early, though?
No. I just want to say, I would not hire a coach. If I was Orlando City, I would not hire a coach who looked at that roster and said, well, here's how we need to change everything. I would only hire the coach if he said, or she said, look at this roster, here's how I'm going to improve it from within. Because there is a talent there. They do have that. Now, they can go out and maybe add another piece in terms of a DP because they have some guys they could buy down. But this is, you know, this is not a tear it all down and build it up. This is a team that could be competitive real quick if they get the right guy in there. As for, you know, was it 23 months with Jason Kreis? A little on the short side, but at some point you have to show genuine improvement. At some point, and I know they've had really bad luck with injuries this year, but you can't do that.
Well, I'm willing to provide the other side on that. So they went, and I know this because I just read this new article that comes out Monday on MLSsoccer.com. Their last 12 games, yes, they're on a 6-game losing streak. Let's not forget they were a 6-game win streak before that. So if you look at the bigger picture of their last 12 games, 18 points. Columbus had 17. NYCFC had 19. LAFC had 18. So when you look at the larger arc of a season, would Jason Kreis still have his job if these last 12 games he went win-loss, 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 and still ended up with the same number of points as NYCFC?
That's actually a really good point.
Yeah, it probably.
Sometimes I do those.
Probably, but he didn't. And I think sometimes you have to realize that the way an organization is run, and certainly in Orlando's case, right now they're running with a little bit of desperation. That's kind of what this offseason was about, was that you aren't going to get that leash, so you can't. You can't let the 6 losses happen and be surprised if you get fired.
Well, he's not surprised. Well, let me ask a second part to this. When they went on the 6-game win streak, who was there? Dom Dwyer.
Dom Dwyer, for sure.
Who was there? Yoshi Yotun. Who was there for half of it? Jonathan Spector. Spector misses 5 of 6 of the losing streak. Yotun misses 5 of 6 of the losing streak. Dom Dwyer doesn't start 4 of the 6. I don't understand what... Name one team in Major League Soccer, if they were to lose their linchpin and center back, their World Cup, who is maybe the best player on the field by some accounts in a World Cup game, Yoshi Otun, and Dom Dwyer, their best attacker, how many teams in Major League Soccer wouldn't go on a losing streak?
I think it's fair. I think it's fair. But only one team did go on that 6-game losing streak, and that's Orlando City. Now, there are always other things going on that don't come out into the light of day behind these things, whether it's relationship between coach and players, players and owners, coach and owners. There's a lot that goes on behind these closed doors. Bobby, I feel like you're saying that maybe he got the hook too late. Did you see a scenario in which Jason Kreis was going to turn this season back around?
Well, no, but I'm also going to pat myself on the back and say even when they were winning, I didn't think they were playing well and that the losses were always going to come. So I'm willing to make the case for Jason Kreis
right. Because
I think it's there to be made.
You could make the numbers case and you could make the personnel case, but the eye test case,
yeah. How
is this team playing? It's not great.
Yeah. Even when they were playing well, I thought, I thought this team won because they dominated the big moments. That ultimately other teams were missing their big chances, and Orlando was scoring them at the right time. And that's largely what
15 minutes.
That's largely what soccer is. It's 5 or 6 seconds at a time, and if you dominate those moments, you win. Well, there's a flip side to that, right? A, if teams figure that out and somehow find a way to maneuver the moments, which is a bigger tactical scheme, but also if you just stop scoring those moments, when you don't have Dom Dwyer to score that goal with 5 minutes left, when you don't have Jonathan Spector to make that big tackle at the end, all of a sudden you're going to start losing.
6 straight losses. They've got Montreal coming up next. Of course, the MLS break continues until next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I just based this on my work schedule.
This coming weekend.
Correct. We do have some Open Cup action going down Jason Kreis out as the head coach of Orlando City SC. Before that, he had a year with New York City FC before Patrick Vieira came along and has now moved on out. Dominic Torrent is reported to be arriving in New York this week to begin training with New York City FC. Before that, Real Salt Lake for a solid, solid stretch that turned them from moribund into one of the best teams, clubs, accomplished.
I think you put a T into moribund.
Well,
did he say moribund?
I might have.
Okay.
I might have. Appreciate you your listening skills, though. You're right Please. There. You know what? When we ask you to close that computer, we get the best.
A whole
you.
New man, dude.
We get the absolute best.
I mean, it's tactical yeah. analysis of what's happening
exactly.
here.
He's picking out every syllable. It's just running straight through that brain of his. My problem is I was such a big reader growing up that now I think I know words that maybe I don't know. It's an issue. It's an issue.
Look, read a lot of picture
Jason
books.
Kreis, before we get to Big Phil, what's next for Jason Kreis? Because he's had two... Plugs
high profile.
Two plugs get yanked. He was so good with RSL.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a possibility that Major League Soccer has passed him by, or is that harsh?
I mean, it feels harsh, but at the same time, his last good year as a head coach was 2013. You know, his last really good run as a head coach was 2013. That's a long time ago. That's really a generation ago in this league. You look around at guys who have been in a similar situation over the last couple of years. Frank Gallup, Jay Heaps are both down in USL. You know, if either of those guys sort of get their second win and you know, do for a lower division team what Gio Savarese did with the Cosmos, maybe you work your way back up. I think it'll probably end up being that for Jason Kreis. The other thing that would be interesting, Dallas – are starting their own USL team next year. Mm-hmm. Jason Kreis and Oscar Pereira go back 20 years.
Jason Kreis isn't getting that job.
Okay, fair enough.
It's not. But I like where your head's at.
Right.
I'm actually going to take a side. I think he, looking at his skill set from talking to guys that have played for him, very good at running sessions, very good at getting guys to be accountable and creating practices that bring the best out of individual talent, not great at setting up a team. I think he goes more the Dom Kinnear route or the Robin Fraser route and becomes an elite assistant, cements himself with someone who's more of a man manager and brings out the best of his skill set and gets a more – maybe learns the man management, the tactics from someone else and then becomes a head coach again. But I think he stays in MLS and becomes an elite assistant.
One of the things to remember is that some of the best U.S. national team games under Klinsmann were in 2014 when Kreis was working
exactly
with him and doing
some
advanced scouting and running some sessions.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think he probably ends up with that Robin Fraser role.
All right, we'll see what happens to Jason Kreis. Out, Orlando City, Taylor Twellman reporting that Luis Felipe, Big Phil Scolari is at the top of the wish list. He put wish list in quotes there. For Orlando City, is with these type of things, a lot of things can change. But he says a Brazilian coach is definitely the direction I'm hearing they want to go. Does that make sense? I mean, Big Phil's been – he's been everywhere.
Yeah.
And back to Brazil again.
So, I mean – for the last 3-4 years, he was managing Guangzhou Evergrande in
won a bunch of championships there.
Yeah, in China.
China. Yep.
I only ever saw them play in the Club World Cup, but that team could ball. That team could really ball, and it wasn't just about having the big Brazilian stars that they had purchased. Like, they actually played soccer. The idea of having him as the head coach for 2 or 3 years with Kaká, and this is the other part of the rumor, with Kaká as the technical director and head coach in waiting while he sort of hones his skills.
Gets his badges.
With Orlando City B, with the Orlando City 2 team, which seems like it's going to be resurrected next year in USL D3. I know this is a lot to keep track of.
Yeah.
But that, like, that appeals to me just in terms of logistical sense because, like, one of the advantages – built into Red Bull or City Football Group is that when Patrick Vieira leaves, you bring in Dominic Torrent. Dominic Torrent is a guy who is schooled in the same soccer philosophy.
And if Dominic Torrent were to leave, they would have somebody ready to go right after that.
Exactly.
There's and a pipeline of institutional knowledge, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Well
played,
Weeby.
I love that word.
Yeah.
That is a really undervalued word.
Yeah.
What? Institutional knowledge?
Yeah.
That's a phrase. That's a phrase.
Yeah. He's on top of things. I'm telling you. Right. Open that computer, please.
I want to say Scolari.
Scolari. Just say Big Phil. It's much easier.
Yeah, that's
and
what
more
I usually
fun.
Say. Yeah. So Big Phil fits into this bucket of players: Zlatan, Schweinsteiger, Tata, Ronaldo, where I actually don't care if they would improve the team or the quality of the league. They're just fun.
Yeah.
And as you always say, Weeby, sometimes it should just be fun.
And I actually think that in this case, it probably would improve
right.
the quality of the league. Yeah. I mean, and I have to imagine that Orlando City and Flavio Da Silva are looking up the road at Atlanta United and looking at that rivalry and looking at that the place that Atlanta have risen to within this league and saying, huh, that Tata guy sure worked out well.
Yep.
Boy, the signing pattern that they have, we want to be a part of that. That's what we want realistically. We want these young South Americans to come to Orlando. And honestly, we want young Brazilians to come to Orlando. What could attract them? Oh, I don't know. Maybe the former two-time manager of Brazil.
Yeah.
That could be a good
World Cup winning manager.
Kaká? Oh, that's pretty good too. You have connections. Oh, we like Orlando? Yeah, okay. Now you start getting the pipeline coming through.
Can I ask the next question since you guys let me give my thoughts on what went wrong for Orlando?
Sure.
Whoever they hire, whether it's Big Phil or somebody else, what do they need to do to get the most out of this team and to get them back on track?
I think they need to be more decisive off the ball. If you look at the way this team makes their runs, it's A, then B, then C. There's a level of hesitation in terms of what these guys are doing. They're not working together. And when you have that hesitation, it causes midfield turnovers. And we cause a lot of midfield turnovers. You give up a lot of goals on the break, and that has just been murdering, absolutely murdering Orlando City. So whoever the coach is, whether it's Big Phil, the other names, Carlos Quiroz is a name that's come up in conversation with people. I know Dunga is a name that I've heard come up as well. James O'Connor, the coach of Louisville City down in USL, and that team is excellent.
I'm going to say through connections, I think Mark Dos Santos will be on that list.
That's another good one. Dos Santos is a very good coach. Whoever the coach is, they have to be better drilled and more decisive off the ball so that they're not so fragile on it.
Absolutely. Part of it is just injuries, too.
Yeah, for sure.
That's not something a coach can necessarily control. But I do think if you look at the second half of their year, like you have Dom Dwyer for some of these games. You have Jonathan Spector. It's a different story.
You know what they could have controlled, though, is doing a better job developing center-back depth, young center-back depth over the last 3 years. They haven't done that. They've had guys in there, and you could, like, I don't know why every team in MLS doesn't go out and find a guy like Aaron Long, who he was an attacker in college, but he competes like hell and he has the right measurables. Let's stash him in USL for 3 years and see what we could turn him into.
I get that, but I also think that doesn't give enough credit to Aaron Long.
That's fair.
Right? I mean, it's really easy to just
everybody,
be like, hey,
everybody does hey, it. Everybody does it with fullbacks. Everybody does it with
yeah,
fullbacks.
No, I feel you. And there's got to be a better way for some of these guys with skill who haven't found the right fit, who haven't been in the right environment, who maybe didn't perform at the level they needed to, or maybe just didn't have coaches that looked at them and said, what are we doing? You're not a forward at the next level.
Right.
We're playing you right now in a position that doesn't benefit you for the long-term arc of your career. It benefits us right now, but it doesn't benefit you. And maybe that's that shift that we need at every single level. But, yeah, I mean, Orlando City B did not pay the dividends that they were looking for.
Right.
Obviously. And some of these DP signings haven't worked. Some of the TAM signings haven't worked. They went all in. They said they were going all in. Jason Kreis said, we are all in. Now Jason Kreis is on the outside looking in Orlando. Orlando City fans, let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS. That is the Hot Take Hotline. You can call it or you can text it. ExtraTime@MLSsoccer.com is the email. U.S. Open Cup round of 16. We've got three results in the books. Union over the Red Bulls, Portland over L.A., Sporting Kansas City over FC Dallas. What do all three of those have in common?
They played the kids?
They're all home teams.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. That's U.S. Open Cup for you, man.
Yeah.
Playing at home. That's the key. Champions play like two of three, almost two of.
The coin is the star.
Yeah, basically. In large part, you want to win that coin flip. I want to talk Sporting Kansas City Dallas. Johan Quaze with a banger. He says it's his best goal ever. But I actually just want to dig into Daniel Shalloway. Because he is good. He is
Bobby,
like,
he's Bobby doesn't rate him.
Really? He
We've
is
been
the
over this.
Young. I don't think we have. I know you did the Rising Star thing, but I didn't realize that it was there's a little shade on that star. I love him. I think he's really good in tight space. I think he sees things as it pertains to a pass or a run or the opportunity to test the goalkeeper quicker than a lot of players in this league. He's not physically impressive. When you look at him, he looks like he's kind of a giraffe. But that giraffe can ball, man. Walk me through your quibbles.
So he definitely looks better, and his growth has been impressive.
Wait.
And
that Draftkin ball is going to go into the next version of the ETR intro.
Yeah. It's just when I'm just a big believer that players ultimately regress to the mean, and for soccer players, particularly attackers, the mean is just their ability to receive a ball in a tight spot. And when I see that ball skip into Daniel Shallowy, I don't see a guy who I feel comfortable will control that ball in the way he wants it. And a player like him who works hard, and it, to me, that kind of player thrives on confidence. And if your confidence bubbles like it is now, you get a run of games like you are now. But that confidence dissipates at some point, and you're going to regress to your mean. And that's what has me concerned. So I feel bad. I don't want to take anything away from him. I'm very okay being wrong on this, and I'm not entirely sure I'm right, but I still wouldn't bet.
What's his mean? When you say regress to his mean, his mean is what? Because, look, I you've said this before, and I understand what you're saying about the comfort on the ball and that little technical moment that players have that's really not – oftentimes it's not an active thought. It's just I'm this good. The ball comes. I do whatever I do with it.
I would say a Ryan Hollingshead type MLS player. Someone you want on your team who can contribute, who can get a lot of minutes and lead you to a supporter shield. But I probably wouldn't want him to start for my team at winger.
Huh.
Walk me through, Doyle, your side. 4 goals, 4 assists in about 1,200 minutes this year, 3-2 in about the same, actually 3 minutes different last year. So he's already tracking just a little bit farther ahead. And he's basically a
21.
He'll be 22 in July. He's basically a game-in, game-out starter right now for the best team in the Western
Conference. Yeah, and we've seen him play a little bit as a center forward, and we've seen him play a little bit as a winger as well.
Usually on the left side.
Yeah, because he's very good at cutting in and sort of finding the space to unleash a shot. And he's got his shot, it's not a rocket, but he's got a quick release. Mm-hmm. And that ends up, I mean, that helps a ton.
And lately it's been cultured. If you would ask me this about Daniel Shallower a year ago, I would have never expected him to be able to take a touch in and bend it far post. Not a powerful bend, but kind of a cultured bend. I do want to give dabs to a kid who has clearly been on the training field after practice working on that shot, and you can see it.
So next time you'd pull one of those off in training or at practice or at the pickup game, point out to everyone around you that was cultured. That bend, very cultured.
Is there a better word? I felt kind
I don't know.
Of
yeah, no,
toolish
I,
for saying
yeah,
it.
No,
but
I don't know. I think it's just it's an understanding of the angles and the power necessary, you know?
Seven goals, six assists.
Not Coutinho, but.
Yeah. 7 goals, 6 assists in about 2,300 minutes over the last year and a half, and that's just regular season. I think he's got.
Okay,
yeah, open
the stats
he's
aside.
Been very good in Open Cup.
Yeah. All right,
putting
the stats aside, when you watch him play, do you think that in a year from now he will still be a starter for SKC?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I think what I see, first of all, I think his first touch is better than you give him credit for. Second of all, he finds space faster than the guys around him, which is why a guy who doesn't have traditional hold-up play skills, is able to shift all over that front line and be a sort of a force multiplier. And I think that as the players around him improve, he will improve as well, because he's smart about finding that space and understanding as play unfolds how to lose the defense. He doesn't run away from anybody. He's not a 1v1 wizard or anything. And he might not ever be anything other than a good MLS starter. But I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up being more than that. And what makes him tough to judge is that he's a Raumdeuter. He's like Wando in that he doesn't have that clear, perfect position in the modern game. But he puts the ball in the net.
And I'm fully willing to acknowledge, and we talk about this on the show, the famous Raumdeuter, Thomas Müller Wandos, if I was a coach, I'm not sure I'd have them on my team, because I like things that I can identify, and I'm willing to acknowledge it's a limitation of.
What one thing I do like about Shallow, and we'll move on from there, is just the fact that he's done it with a lot of different attacking pieces around him in Kansas City this year. Felipe Gutierrez was mowing people down. Well, then he was gone. Oh, Johnny Russell was good, and so then he had the balance right to left with the both of them. Kyrie Shelton obviously hasn't scored, but has been a presence that he can play off of. And then now you kind of have a different look coming in with Johan Quaze in this game, and not as many others. But Quaze is starting to prove that maybe all of our hate was a little bit overblown. Maybe.
It was a banger.
It was a banger.
He looks nothing like a designated player.
Probably not, no. Some more games coming up, most of them midweek. But you do have Houston Dynamo, Minnesota United tonight. On Monday, also DC United, Orlando City, Louisville City, Nashville, Atlanta United, Chicago Fire, LAFC, and Sacramento Republic. FC. We'll see how many USL teams get through, how many MLS teams, who hosts in the quarterfinals, and, of course, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental. We'll be at the final, wherever that is. We're going to go to break. On the other side, Sam Stachel, Gam Tam, and Sam.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. You know what that music means. It's Sam Stachel, Gam Tam, and Sam on the other line. At Sam Stachel to bring him on now. Sam, what's up, man?
Not too much. How you doing, Weeby?
Doing good. Just, enjoying that World Cup glow. Sans U.S., of course. But let's start with the news of the day. We just broke down this with Doyle and Bobby Warshaw. Jason Kreis out. You were in Utah when he was with Real Salt Lake. You've covered him extensively. What happened here and why?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think first things first, they didn't get the results that they were hoping for, right? I believe his record was 21, 29, and 14 or thereabouts with Orlando in nearly two full seasons. And, that's not good enough for what that club's trying to do. That said, I think my main takeaway from this doesn't really have much to do with Jason Kreis, and it kind of has more to do with Orlando as an organization. They let him and his team totally rebuild their roster over the offseason. That's been covered pretty extensively. Obviously, they got Justin Miriam, Sasha Kleshton, Uri Rossell, Jose Coleman, Lamine Sane. You know, the list goes on. I think it was 15 new players.
Al Munir. Yeah, I mean, you can go check that. TransactionsMLSsoccer.com. If you're not going there, that's a great resource.
Yeah, for sure. I use that thing all the time. Anyway, so they let him completely rebuild the team. They let him make some expensive deals in trades and in signings. And now you're bringing in a new coach less than halfway through the season who may or may not like those signings, who may or may not like those players, may or may not like those contracts, but he's tied to them. So I think that just – they have enough talent to go on and make the playoffs this year, and the season's by no means over. They're still in sixth place, so they still have a shot, right? But you're just creating a situation not that unlike what Kreis took over when he took over from Adrian Heath. In that you have a lot of, I don't want to say bad contracts, but you're tied to a lot of expensive contracts.
You have long-term commitments, let's say.
Yeah, you don't have wiggle room. And so that's hurting them this year with their ability to add reinforcements. And if the new coach that comes in doesn't like the players that he's tied to, well, then you're back to square one and you have to kind of blow things up and have another massive offseason overhaul. So that's kind of my takeaway from it. Can they still go out and succeed this season? Absolutely. I don't know if this helps them. You know, it's a big shakeup, but we'll see. But that's kind of my long-term shakeup. I think it's kind of a danger of turning into like early years TFC with high hopes and a short leash and a lot of turnover.
Adrian Heath was asked about this, as he would be, given that he coached this team and was let go. And he said, it's crazy that the pressure is I can't remember the quote exactly on the pressure, but basically his take was going along with that was like, why would you do this at this time? You undercut yourself. And he talked about the pressure mounting and how people with, I think the words were blogs, are piping off about stuff that they don't know. And maybe you could put Extra Time Radio in that category as well. What does it say about Orlando City, the job? Does it say something bigger about Major League Soccer and that he was given such a short lease? And, maybe people outside of the league would say this isn't that short at all, but are we going to see an era in MLS where coaches are being changed much more often than not? Do you hear people talking about this?
I think we've sort of entered that era already. I would need to go back and kind of look at the statistics, but I believe the rate of turnover in MLS for coaches has decreased in recent seasons. I don't think this really says that much about MLS. I think this is an Orlando issue. Adrian Heath is a good example, right? Like, he looks like he's probably going to get some time in Minnesota. They'll probably be patient with him. Maybe that'll come back to haunt me saying that, but I would anticipate they'll be patient with him and they'll give him time to build. So it just depends on the club. It depends on the ownership. It depends on fan pressure and all of those things together. I think it's interesting for Orlando, though, because, long term, when you cycle through coaches this quick, you become a less attractive destination for other coaches, right? They're like, okay, you can give me a four-year contract maybe, but I might be gone in 18 months. There's no guarantees. I mean, there's no guarantees in any coach's life, but that would raise my eyebrow if I was a candidate for that job, basically.
So who's the next crop? Who are the guys that you're looking at as possible replacements? We've talked Big Phil. We've talked Brazilians, the Kaká rumors. Can you lend any credibility to those rumors? What are you hearing?
Yeah, so I have no idea about the Kaká rumors. I would not be shocked to see them go Brazilian, though. That's kind of the expectation of people that I've been talking to, at least. So Big Phil definitely would be a candidate, I'm sure. I think one to keep an eye on would be Dunga, former Brazil national team manager. Who knows? Maybe Kaká comes in and rides in on his white horse again for Orlando. But I don't know anything about that. That would be very interesting. I think there's some interesting candidates within more of the MLS sphere. There's an article on the site right now, I know, talking about Robin Fraser, talking about Caleb Porter. Obviously, that's one that kind of jumps off the page. I would be a little bit surprised if they go that route, though. That just sort of feels similar to Kreis. So I don't know if they would go that way or if they would want to go for more of a change, more of a departure from what they just had, and maybe go with the Brazilian.
We talked to Ernie Stewart last time we had you on. Of course, you've been covering that for months. You just got off the phone, though, with Greg Berhalter. I think the obvious questions are there. U.S. national team, how's he feel about it? Is he hiding his cards?
Sort of. I mean, he was careful to not say too much, right, as expected. But I did find it interesting. So last fall, I think it was like 2 days after Trinidad, people in Columbus asked him about the job and if he'd be interested. And he said, yes, he would be interested. But he felt like he didn't have enough reps as a coach yet, that he wanted to gain some more experience. He felt like he didn't have enough under his belt to manage the U.S. national team. So I asked him, I said, do you still feel that way now? And he didn't say, no, I don't still feel that way. But he didn't exactly say, yeah, I think I need more time. It was sort of somewhere in between. So maybe he backed off that stance a little bit. The article will be up shortly online, so go check that out. But I think you'd be interested. I think if they offered him the gig, I don't think he would turn it down. That's just my read. He didn't say that. Maybe I'm off base, but that's how I view things.
What else is going on in Columbus with Greg? 3G, of course, Jesse Zardes atop the Golden Boot. They're moving on up the standings. What are you hearing from him?
Yeah, so I talked to him a lot about Jesse Zardes and just kind of the system that they have. I thought it was interesting just because, you know, they've had three different number nines in the past few years that have done really, really well with Kai Kamara, Ola Kamara, and now Giassi. So talk to him a lot about that. But kind of more interesting maybe for news hound Columbus fans anyway, I asked him what the plans are for the summer window. They have a good deal of allocation money, general and targeted left. And he said he didn't say that they're targeting anyone with the TAM, but he said they're looking to add to their attack, add some attacking depth. So that could be something to keep an eye on in Ohio when the window opens here in a couple of weeks.
All right, before I let you go, Sam, we've been asking folks what their habits around this World Cup are. How do you watch it? How do you consume it? How is Gam Tam and Sam doing this thing from Chicago?
Yeah, so the World Cup is great. It's my favorite time every 4 years. And being a soccer journalist during the World Cup is especially great because I get to work from home right in front of the TV, watch all the games, watch all the coverage, have it on. And, you know, I'm technically working, so I don't need to feel bad about watching it. My boss isn't hounding me over my back. So that's how I'm experiencing it. I ride and die with the underdogs. So all about those teams. Was pretty psyched about Tunisia when they got that goal against England, and then a lot less psyched when they forgot to mark Harry Kane at the back post. I don't know how you do that.
Yeah,
but
probably should remember
they did
that.
It.
One last one. Would you or would you not root for Mexico?
Yeah, I was rooting for Mexico on Sunday, and like, personally, I don't care if Landon Donovan's rooting for Mexico. I hope he's rooting for Mexico out of the purity of his heart, though, and not out of the purity of his wallet. You know, I don't want to see Landon being paid and that being the motivation to root for him. So, yeah, but I was rooting for Mexico. Played a great game. That was one of the more fun games of the tournament so far.
There you have it, Gam Tam and Sam. We get at it with them every single week here on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. At Sam Stachel on Twitter. Sam, go back to your work. Enjoy yourself, man.
Thanks, baby. Have a good one.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Into the mailbag, the hot take hotline, you should know it by heart by now, 401-206-0MLS. Email, Twitter, all that is on our website. Go check it out. Let's get into it, guys. We don't have too much, so hit us up during this break. We might go dry. The U.S. Soccer Snob on Twitter says he completely agrees with my advice to the listener who will be in Costa Rica for the World Cup. 8 years ago, he says he was in Madrid for the World Cup final. Bought a Villa jersey, got high fives from the locals all night celebrating their victory. A little bit different because it's not quote-unquote rivalry. But, Bobby, do you understand this prompt? You are in a country, this time Costa Rica, mm-hmm. during the World Cup. They're playing. You have an opportunity mm-hmm. to experience that with a different group of people, a different fan base. We had a person email in and say, what jersey should I wear? They listed a bunch of jerseys that were not Costa Rica jerseys. I say, go buy the knockoff. Go mix in with the crowd. Go have the best night of your life.
I'm with you. Do as the locals do. Always. That's like the number one piece of travel advice you should give anyone, even for something like cheering for their team.
You're okay, though, with Costa Rica. You would go. You'd be good.
Yeah.
Okay.
This, to me, is an easy one.
Easy one. All right. No name, but he's actively mocked me in the text thread here, so I have respect for him. He says, going into the season, no one would have accused Sporting Kansas City of having this much depth to carry them through the season. All we wanted was a home knockout round game. Should we hope for more? Sporting Kansas City this year, what should the goal be?
If I was a Sporting Kansas City fan, I wouldn't start hoping until end of September. Given what we've seen of this team from, you know, August onwards, each of the last 4 years, 5 years, 4 years, yeah. since 2013.
Correct.
I hold on to that, you know, tamp it back at this point. There is much more. It seems there is much more depth than in years past, and they've been able to score goals without that goal-scoring center forward. And who knows, maybe there will be a big number nine signing in the window, but I would...
Do you want there to be?
I would urge caution.
Should the KC fans want
one? Do you think there will be? I think that's the bigger question. I think Sporting Kansas City fans, you better believe they want there to be, but they've wanted there to be for a while now, and it hasn't come. Do we think it'll actually come?
Nah.
No, you don't think so? I mean, they've had a couple windows.
I just have no idea. Partially, and this is a credit to KC, they're pretty good at keeping these things to their vest. They're pretty well in a run organization. They don't let leaks. They don't. Yeah, so I'm not sure any of us have any good info on that.
How about this, Bobby? They get a top-end number nine, whatever that player is. Let's just say it's not Raul Ruy Diaz, but it's not, I don't know, Christian Coleman. It's somewhere in between. Somebody who produces but doesn't overwhelm you with star power. What's that make this team?
You use the word top end, right? And that's what has me caught up on this question, because in our general proverbial thought of top end striker, I'm not sure that's what SKC wants. I think if SKC gets a quote-unquote top end striker in the mold that they want that fits their style, then I think they have a chance.
Okay. Here, Andrew via email, and if your name's Andrew and you send a good email, you have a good chance of getting on this show. Says he loves the pod, listens to it at work in Kentucky whenever it comes out. Sporting KC is doing really well. He says there's a gap in terms of a defined goal scorer. Always rumors, but so far nothing. Here's his question. What is the type of player that would fit into their system? Don't tell me the player. Tell me the type of player Peter Vermees should be looking for.
I don't have a good answer to that. I'd be really interested to hear what you guys think.
Kyrie Shelton with goals. Like, Shelton's been great. I mean, he drags the team. Like, there's a reason the wingers are scoring more. There's a reason Felipe Gutierrez was getting on the board every game when he was healthy. Shelton drags defenses around. He does the Marco Aurelius stuff. That was
I was going to say, like, it's the same Marco Aurelius style.
Right.
But with a little bit more – like, even if he's not a 15-goal scorer, even if he's, like, a 9 to 11 and he sets up the rest of your guys, I mean, that could work for you if you're Peter Vermees.
Yeah, it could, but
I mean, you want more.
As good
obviously.
As Marco Aurelius was in the first 2 months of the season, LAFC still went out and spent $1 million to get Adama Diomande, who's more of a pure goal scorer.
True.
If Kyrie Shelton could get up to the point where he was a 9-10 goal scorer, I don't think this would even be a discussion, because what he has done to open that attack up for other guys is so valuable. But Kyrie Shelton does not look like a 9-10 goal scorer. He looks like a 3-4 goal scorer.
Because of his movement, he's getting to the chances and he's just bad at finishing?
It seems like it, yeah. Yeah.
Is he a confidence case? You talked about Daniel Shallowy. I'm not saying that he lacks it, because if you follow him on social media and as a general personality, it seems he has plenty of confidence. But maybe right now, that limited point in front of net, inside the 18-yard box, that's where it seems to go haywire. for Kyrie Shelton. Up to that point, I'm like, this dude's really good.
Yep.
This is why we wanted him to play more for NYCFC. Maybe Patrick Vieira saw that little inside the 18 uncomfort.
I also just want to point out how you guys are like, yeah, we want the guy that is really good, has really good movement, works hard on defense, drag defenders out,
and
can link with his teammates,
play,
and then he's going to score 10.
I mean, you asked what the ideal forward would be.
Shella said this to me in Dallas once. He's like, you got to be able to pass. You got to be able to shield the defenders. You got to be able to move. I was like, bro, you got to go yourself $25 million to sign Sergio Busquets because I can't do that job for you.
Tell me about what it's like to have a signing, big money or otherwise, coming into your locker room middle of the season if you're a good team.
Well, when you guys brought Bobby Warshaw into ETR in the middle of this. No. Go ahead, Bobby.
In the middle
That's
of the
why
season,
we had to split these two up. We're like, can't put them in the same room. You know, you get them on the field, you get them on the set. It can work, but they don't talk often.
In the middle of the season, this happened. I've had this happen a few times. And it's really disconcerting because you've been there. Listen, even if you're not a DP, you really feel like you have something to offer that team. And you feel like the way the team is constructed, you can help and everyone can help. All of a sudden, that guy comes in. He hasn't trained. He didn't go through preseason. He hasn't been there for 6 months. And they almost always play right away because you've got to get them integrated into the team. And if they don't do well, which they usually don't in Major League Soccer, it creates problems. It's a really high-risk, high-reward proposition. And it unstabilizes people in the locker room. Because they felt like they were putting in work to get the playing time that guy just got.
I apologize for all the Sporting KC content. Ultimately, you've got to hit us up for us to talk about your team unless something's going down. Right now, we've got a break. One more, we'll get out of here. Another Andrew, this one from Albuquerque, says he's listening to American Fiasco right now. He loves it. Bobby's a big fan of the podcast as well. Roger Bennett put that one out about 1998, and you guessed it, the fiasco that was that tournament. He wonders what the difference between how the players felt in 98, as if they ruined soccer in America, and now in 2018 not making the World Cup. Are the current players under less pressure than that 98 generation? Maybe you have to speak here, Doyle, because my 1998 memories
are the current
like skateboarding and riding bikes in the neighborhood.
Are the current U.S. players under less pressure than
98? Under less pressure, yeah.
No. They're under much, much more pressure, I think, than 98, because like there wasn't a lot of soccer coverage back then. And like
I think it's more in terms of what was at stake with their success or failure. Like these players, by and large, they failed here, and we all know they did, but the league's not going away. The league's not in dire straits.
Right.
There are people who care about American soccer and U.S. soccer. The game itself in this country is at a better point than ever before. In 98, maybe there was a certain sense of like, you know, MLS wasn't doing all that well.
I think there was some existential stuff, but I actually think the 2002 U.S. team was the one that was under maybe a little bit more pressure in that regard. Because if you know, MLS almost folded after a 2001 season. And when they made that run to the quarterfinals, that, like, if they had not played that well, I don't think that things go as smoothly with the expansion era, which, of course, began in 2004 and was based in large part off a lot of those guys raising the profile of the game here. I mean, that said, even with the sort of existential cloud hanging over MLS in those days, There's just more pressure today. There's more access today. There's more expectation in terms of how well you're going to play. These kids who are, you know, who've been on the last two U20 World Cup teams, they see themselves rightfully as peers to guys like Mbappe and you know, the other great young players around the world. And they should. And with that comes more pressure. Bobby's making a face.
I'm not convinced by it. You usually say things and I'm like, oh yeah, I get that, but I think I might go point Weeby on this.
I don't even know what point I made.
You played the devil's advocate point.
Yeah. I was just making the point that, you know, look, you were part of a generation that brought it to the forefront of American sports consumers. That's a word I don't want to use in this situation, but that's really what it is at large. A bunch of people that haven't decided if they like the sport, and you can be the inspirational generation. Of course, we've lost that for this tournament, and it is what kills me the most.
Well, the thing about 98 is, right now, we didn't qualify for the World Cup. Soccer in America is not going anywhere. The growth has slowed, but it's still going to be here. In 98, they were worried it might not be here at all, and that's the difference.
What do you remember from 98?
A lot of boogers.
How old were you? Yeah, you were younger than I was, weren't you?
Yeah, 10.
Yeah. What was your first World Cup memory with the U.S.?
I went to 94.
But, like, okay, outside of that,
my first watching the Chris Albright, Ben Olsen Olympic team in Hershey, Pennsylvania. They had Olympic
that was
qualifiers.
That was the 96 Olympic team.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Because they went down to Atlanta, and my brother did a road trip from Harrisburg down to Atlanta, but I got to see him first and qualify in Hershey.
Yeah. Albright and Olsen, were those are the...
And who was Aiden Brown was the goalie? Yeah. Josh Wolf, I believe.
That might have been the 2000 team. No, that was a 2000 team. That wasn't 96. Josh Wolf was 2000 because he was part of that group that finished fourth in Sydney with Dunny as the captain.
There you go. That's your lesson there in American soccer history. That's it for us. Big thanks to Sam Station for joining. Thanks for you to listening. Enjoy the World Cup this week, Thursday. We will be back. And then, of course, MLS is back on Saturday and Sunday. We'll see you then. Thanks, everybody.